Hello and welcome back to Blacker Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. We're back for Walking Dead Wednesdays, The Ones Who Live, our penultimate episode. Last week, it was What We, This Week, Become, written by Gabriel Lalanis and Matthew Negrete, directed by Michael E. Satrazimus. I think I got that just about right. Another great episode in the miniseries. They have to give this another season, right? We're not going to get everything we want concluded in the next episode. And sure, every other program has been, the spinoffs anyway, been renewed for a second season. And it's possible that Michonne and Rick could finish off their own arcs in those seasons. But I don't want that. I want them to have a second season with their own show, not tainted by the mediocrity of the others, so that we can continue focusing on their journey and their journey only. And I think that they're about to cause a civil war, which is something that was referenced to a civil war and the Cold War in this season. So it could come to two certain conclusions, or one could be a premonition for the future. Because I do think while they certainly can wound the CRM in ways that they are not going to expect, they're going to have a lot of people still be on their side, choosing security over morality, as we saw this episode in the characterization of Anne, despite at the end making an unconscious choice. I really like this episode. It's the end of Polly McIntosh's character, which is Jada / Anne. I loved her as a villain. I have loved her as a villain because she is not someone that we're necessarily rooting for to be redeemed, and they didn't go that route per se. But she's reflective of so many other characters that have been given second chances and don't take advantage of that, that are offered another route but can't go back, as we heard from past characters. So I love the symmetry that's continuing to build in this universe. And while she definitely got what she deserved, she gave a deserving performance.
I will remember you.
And while it's a high bar episode, it is the weakest for me out of the series thus far. So I gave it a 9.8 out of 10. There were a few fallacies that were bothersome. Not really to the storyline, unless you make your own assumptions to be read. But there are just some weaker aspects of this episode that just were not a part of the previous four, but nothing that clearly is not still an A. Things I forgot to speak on from last episode. Rick's hesitancy to touch Michonne when they got back to their home or the apartment home, and her refusal at denying his touch, because they had that moment of, I would never leave you. She's like, okay, that's good to hear. And now that that moment had passed, he was able to express physically what he could not convey to her emotionally. And that leads to one of the lines this episode where he tells her, I denied it. I tried to push you away, but I never let go. And that was essentially him not choosing to hit the button, him continuing to stay in her presence because he knows that she can bring him back. She can set the world right for him. And that part of him that was still holding on, that didn't ever let go, that is the saving grace. So I like how that was brought back into it. But I do like that he took a moment to acknowledge before touching her that he had hurt her feelings, but he still very much was pleading for her understanding. I saw Danai discussing the song at the end of the episode. I was going, and I tried to find that song, and I was going to say in that episode, I wonder if this is a South African song, and she confirmed that it is, and it's a friend of hers. The storm also playing in the mood. That was another shout out to how the conversations reflected the environment. I did not bring up the Roomba and the fact that Rick did not know what it is because he's a country boy at heart and Michonne is more affluent. We got more of Michonne's backstory that she wanted to be a writer, that she's a free spirit. And I also didn't bring up that I actually read the Ramona books as a kid before I found the adult section or the young adult section in the library. And from there, there was no looking back. I did not mention, but I thought it was rather obvious, the callback to We Are the Walking Dead, Rick believing in the philosophy of his grandfather and how he manifested that in his psyche to survive the CRM and his continued captivity, which created a bit of a Stockholm syndrome. There is a bit of debate on whether or not he is in a cult. And simply put, if you're isolated from your family, if you're fed false ideology under the pretense of truth, and the truths are kept from you and the public at large, no, you're getting closer to cult territory than not. So I think the continued rejection of that is why exactly so many people are susceptible of cults, because they don't want to admit that vulnerability to themselves. But if you are placed in the right amount of stress, anxiety, and mental vulnerability, simply put, All it takes is a strong person, a strong leader like Bill, with his books that are teaching people about how violence is perfectly fine in the bigger picture of things, then yeah, you're going to get people falling in line. And you see that even more so once again in this episode in the way Jadis speaks. She speaks as if she's saying what she has been told and repeating it as a doctrine to put up a wall between herself and who she is trying to create herself to be. And if you're living on a false identity, well then, you are not essentially being yourself. And it's the culture that is making you feel that way. I did shout out on my Twitter, and then I heard it on another podcast about Mary McLeod Bethune, if that was the civil rights activist that Denai had taken the last name Bethune from. I got no responses, so I didn't. I didn't know if that was true or not. And I think the only thing I wanted to bring up that I hadn't mentioned thus far is the inclusion of diversity for the extras. I've been noticing the one-off characters, a lot of them have been of different nationalities, and it is noticed, even if it's subtle, and I certainly appreciate it. So let's talk about this episode. We basically have Jadis catching up with Rick and Michonne, who spend the majority of the episode in their honeymoon phase. Rick is recalling his memories of Carl. Michonne is asserting to him that he's still the brave man, even more so. I like that positive reinforcement that she gives him. They're thinking about their children. They're talking about their children. They are discussing Thorn and about Rick's emotions and how he was feeling, all as they are going through the, because I don't know that much about geography, but I believe that the Yellowstone National Park is in Wyoming, maybe, but that's where they're located. So they have this lovely background that they're backpacking through. They stumble across some random people that they decide to help, which turns into a situation that Jadis takes advantage of after she catches up with them, because she has decided that they need to die, despite the fact that while their death was suspicious, the reclamation team came, they saw, they destroyed the evidence, and they moved the fuck on. But Jadis could not move the fuck on. So she decides to chase them down because she's a glutton for punishment.
If you're feeling suicidal, you've come to the right place.
At least she fully admits that she was an idiot to think that she was gonna take both of them down by herself. Especially when one is a black woman with a justifiable grudge. There's some back and forth between the two as she tries to get the upper hand on them, but she makes several mistakes, mainly overly monologuing before eventually she is bitten in the neck. There's no chopping off that. And she ends up conceding her defeat. But we learn that Jadis has, for the past 3 years, been meeting up with Gabriel once a year to essentially confess her sins, but try to retain part of herself. So she also didn't fully let go, despite all of the actions that she doubled down on that led to her fate. And I think that Jadis is another example of a character that could have had a different path if they had made different decisions. Someone who was placed in a position of power, who was an A, and then upon the burden of leadership, upon the burden of loss, of responsibility, crumbled just in the familiar way in which Rick did. But he didn't have or she didn't have a ride or die that come hail or high water, she was going to go through the mud, the trenches, and whatever the fuck else she had to do to get to him because of her faith and her strength and her confidence to do so.
I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch.
But through these flashbacks, we find out she did have an opportunity to walk away, to simply roll it back, which also seemed to be a familiar theme throughout this episode. Which leads to Michonne realizing that no, they can't just roll on home as if the CRM isn't a problem that needed to be dealt with. And I think once she got Rick back, and because of her concern for her kids, that was overriding her need for vengeance. And now going back home to heal, that became more prominent. But after, I think, her seeing how they really get to people and use their own fear, really, to disseminate them into becoming monsters in the guise of heroics or heroism, I think she realizes, no. We need to get this fucking echelon briefing. We need to figure out what the fuck is going on. And we need to inform the people, because the people I saw, they would not stand for that, for what they are doing. And I think that that Cascade base is going to be their base of operations, and that the other Civic Republic is going to end up being the other side, because they're not going to lose all of their shit. But they had the Cascades. They said they spent a year fitting this out as like the second major base of operations. So I have a feeling that's where the split is going to be. I could be totally wrong, because I was wrong in regards to some of Jadis's motivations. I certainly was far harsher on her in terms of what exactly she wanted from Rick. I didn't think she really had a dossier anywhere. I thought she was lying. And it turns out that she really did try to pick a side. She just knew she was picking the wrong side, in spite of the fact that she already had come to that conclusion. But it just goes to show, you could easily convince yourself you're the hero even when you are clearly the villain. What was one of the lines that Jadis gave? Would you think, Gabriel, I'd be a part of a group that would hurt people?
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
We have all ran into this on social media in our lives. When you are disillusional in your thinking, you can't hear yourself to understand the hypocrisy that's coming out of your mouth or your keyboard. Let's talk more about Jadis, because that was pretty much the gist of the episode. I think that she certainly was trying to convince Rick, or she was upset at Michonne because she thought that she was influencing Rick in the deal that they had to protect Alexandria. Because if Rick is on her side, well, then she can justify continuing the CRM's altruistic goals. All the blood that she shed hasn't been for naught. But at the same time, she knows truly it's going to come down to Michonne's word about it. And it's only when Michonne says, hey, let's make this deal, I was more concerned about myself, because she knows she's not going to talk Michonne into joining the CRM, but because Rick was already half brainwashed, which that's another read on that scene where she says, is there something else that's keeping you here? I knee-jerk assumed that she was talking about herself, because she did say in that moment, I did save your life. But it could also be her fishing to see if he was actually, you know, invested in what she had been trying to push on him, or she herself believes this entire time. Like, she is a true believer, despite everything that Rick keeps telling her she isn't. You're saying this is for the greater good, but it's for you. And he was right. This is selfishly protecting yourself because you needed not to lose another community, but the community you couldn't lose, you just didn't understand was the one that you were trying to protect at the same time by. She got very confused in what her modus operandi was. I did like the line to her from Gabriel, you're lying to yourself, you keep lying to yourself, which was very reflective of what Michonne said to Rick last episode when he said something about burning to bring back the good. She's like, okay, Rick. But she wasn't upset at that moment because she realized, like, uh-huh. There's something going on that they really took from you, and you are stricken with fear and anxiety, and you have to confront that. I like the line where she said you weren't dreaming, Rick, because he's been dreaming this whole time to maintain his sanity, and the fact that she tells him what you have, what you want, what you were trying to achieve, that wasn't something that was unattainable. I like the line, I wish I died an artist. Because going back to Anne's story, and I know it's been a while since The Walking Dead has been on, and we have, if you were interested anyway, because I can understand Jadis not being a fan favorite character. It's not like she was trying to, she was trying to wiggle her way into our hearts this entire time. Even with Gabriel, she admitted, I was just using you as the last person for a B. But even then, she could not take that, because she knew he was an A. He wasn't going to stand for what the CRM was going to do either, and they would have killed him. But going back to things that have happened with the trash people, when she was an artist, and she, when the world collapsed, had retreated to the garbage for solitude. Because she figured that she could get inspiration for her artwork while she was there. And that was what that flashback was. And it's funny because she made a cat, and that's the cat that Rick gave to Michonne. So they had actually been a fan of her artwork before. So they really did have an initial connection as far as, when I was going back last episode wondering, like, what do you mean you're putting us in a fated circle together? But in the end, it's what initiated, you know, her being responsible because more people came to her and she became leader of this group. And yes, they were fucking weird. And yes, they were working for the CRM as slavers, but they were going about their survival. And then they encountered our people. Then there was the Negan situation where we had a deal, but she got offered a better deal. She's a shit because it's our people. But also just being absolutely subjective, or objective is the right word I'm looking for, on the matter. Like she said, I got a better offer. And at that time, Negan was the... She's always sided with the bigger opponent, or the opponent that seems to be, you're not going to fight up against them. You're not going to win that battle if you go up against them. So she chose Negan's side because she didn't have faith in the fact that Rick and his people could win that war. And they ended up winning that war. And for choosing the wrong side, Simon killed all of her people because she tried to show remorse and she just, like, she couldn't naturally emote it enough for him, even though he was going to kill all her people anyway. And that was one of the highlight episodes for me because her performance really shone through. That's when I was like, yeah, even though she's this garbage person and she speaks like an idiot, there's behind this characterization. And after that loss, you know, she tried to get back to Alexander, but she was taken in by Rick. And she couldn't let go of the CRM. She had another way out, and she chose once again this other, because she thought that was her atonement. I think when she couldn't get Gabriel, she couldn't give him up. With her B, because she said she had an A. Well, she had an A. She knew Gabriel was an A, but she couldn't give him up to the CRM. So that's when she found Rick at the bank, because she was running away at that point, and said she had a B. She was lying that she had an A so that they wouldn't kill him. And that's what she means by "I saved your life." But on the flip side of that, Michonne definitely has her moment about how she also stole his life. You saved my life, thank you. But you could have easily taken me home, and seeing you run off with Gabriel, meeting once a year, knowing that these two people are desperately reaching out and mourning the other for your own selfish purposes. But because she's trying to maintain this balance, she feels, between these two communities, because she doesn't give up Alexandria. So if she was fully down with the cause, fully as committed as she says she was, then giving up Alexandria would be a part of that. Because there is no, kind of like a... the Martians, when they were transitioning the ring, it's not Salvatore, it's one of his minions. And he goes, well, there can be no more, you know, breaks in codes. They get far more militant in their idea, because if we're to separate ourselves, then you have to fully commit. There's no personal connections. And she even says that to Gabriel. When I'm there, it's all about responsibility and the greater good, nothing about myself. And that's how, again, they indoctrinate you. I'm glad they showed her commissioning, or having been commissioned, to draw Maggie's family. And that's a legacy she left behind at Alexandria as Anne, as the person that she truly wanted to die as. And in the end, you have, I believe it was Gabriel, who made the grave marker for her, because he was walking to their yearly meeting in the trench coat, because in the other times he always showed up with a crate and she was always typically there, but this time she wasn't there. And I think he's the one that made the grave for her, because I can't see Michonne and Rick taking her all the way out and making a grave for her and putting the A. That seemed to me more of a Gabriel thing, but I could be wrong. That she took Gabriel's last name was very surprising. She preferred to, and I think that's what she couldn't let go of, was that connection with him. A lot of people were calling Gabriel a whore and a piece of shit. I know he's another not fan favorite character at all. I was very tepid on Gabriel. I think that he became tolerable, but I could have taken him or left him for the most part. But I think a lot of people did like his growth, his arc, from where he started to where he ended, because he became a touchstone to a lot of people in the community. He's raising Rosita's baby. But I think because the time frame is a little thrown, that, and if you did not watch the rest of the season, which a lot of people have not, so then when one person says something, then you just keep repeating it, and then no one actually looks for the truth of the matter, you would realize that by the time that kiss happened, Rosita was already dead, which is why he said, come back to Alexandria with me. Secondly, him saying, I looked for you with the ham radio with Rosita, like, oh, wasn't he with her back then? Rosita was with everybody back then, in case y'all forgot. She was with Sadiq shortly before she was with Gabriel. And then she was with someone else. She just got around. They were in kind of a, I think she had a lot of friends with benefits. She didn't have no commitment until she decided to commit to Gabriel once she got pregnant. And that's only when they were just starting, or she was just starting to commit to him in that type of way. And then you had Eugene.
Creeper. Oh man.
That he was searching for her. Gabriel definitely is someone who takes care of his flock. When she showed up, he's like, is it okay, even if you are here alone? He asked for forgiveness because he feels that he failed her, which is why he was looking for her afterwards, because she just left. And it wouldn't, I don't know, not be within his characterization to try to reach out to her and at least have some resolution. I don't think that has to mean that he meant to jump her bones or track her down in a relationship. I mean, they were just starting to as well. So I don't know where the hardship on Gabriel is. I mean, don't like him all you want, but don't toss shit on him that's not true. I did like the way Jadis was dressed in her meetings with Gabriel, how she had dark colors with light colors. And then by the third meeting, she was completely just in her light blue. And she tests herself by admitting that Gabriel is a vulnerability, and she tries to get rid of that, but she's unable to do so. And he confronts her with it. Like, if you are saying this is who you are, then show me who you are. And she's unable to do so. And he's like, I'll see you next year, Anne, because that's who you actually are. And he admits too that he likes having something that's selfishly his own. And I think that's a very human thing. to want and need in life, especially when you give so much to others. I didn't expect Gabriel in this episode, but I was glad to get him. Was certainly rooting for another Black brother to show up. And maybe they will in a season two. Let's move on from Jadis's character and her end. I was surprised that it wasn't Michonne that killed her, because she definitely made her intentions known the minute she showed up. She was big mad. She was offering none of the quiet response that Rick usually gives at that comment, "I saved your life." She's like, "No, you took his life. You took his life away from his children. He did not get to see his son being born. He did not get to see his son's first steps. I didn't know if he was alive or dead. He's been trying to escape. He's been a prisoner. You stole our lives." Jada certainly feared Michonne more, because she knew she could manipulate and has been manipulating Rick, but Michonne is not the same. She's one of those that always had their shit together and will always have their shit together, because her shit, as she said many years ago, never stopped being together. Even when she slid off in the deep end, she knew what she was doing. I think with Michonne, Jadis can't hide from that truth. So when she's saying all of that, she's not in her head. And she doesn't think to rebuttal it. She only comes back up with the excuses, the reasons. "Well, I wanted to thank you because, you know, you didn't, you're not going to die in vain. Don't let that be your peace." And I think she wanted, and she was hoping, when she had them at gunpoint, "Maybe I can talk some sense." And try. And I think even at the end, she was still trying to get Michonne to say, "How do we protect Alexandria? This is about protecting Alexandria." But she was never going to convince her of the lie.
"Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell."
I did chuckle at their interactions when she's like, zip tie him to the bed. And of course, she doesn't zip tie him, pretends to do so. And she can't see behind. And then she's zip tied. And she oddly decides to kick the hatchet over towards Michonne versus away from the door, which was one of those fallacy choices where I'm like, no, you wouldn't have. Even if your heart wasn't into killing them, you were trying to convince yourself enough that you were going to be riled up enough to just be able to do it. But I still find that hard to conceive. Especially at that moment. And Michonne's able to use that hatchet right to her gut, wounding her in a way that she would have died of those wounds, because she was looking half dead before. And I love how she played the transition of being slightly hurt to, "I'm gonna need a doctor.
I'm dying. Help me."
Rick's all like, "We need the dossier." Michonne's like, "I don't give a fuck." I love that they're arguing, but not really arguing, because he can't really say anything about her points because she's validated. But he's like, "Well, you know, there's this brainwashing thing going on. And okay, sure. But can we just at least try to get the dossier from her? And then you can kill her, be my guest, but maybe maim first." uh, And then they're led into that trap. And it's Michonne, as I stated earlier, who recognizes she needs Michonne to concede. And she knows if Michonne concedes, that Rick will concede. And she's trying to double cross them at this moment. But because Michonne can communicate with their eyes, he knew that his woman was up to something. And as she went to get the med kit, she was actually going to get the other weapon in the room that Jadis forgot about to put her at their mercy. But that's when she forgot about the other zombified people in the room and they came for her. And that's how she got her end. But after telling her what she was going to do, because what did she say? Tell me you won't come after them. And Michonne says, no. It felt maternal in a way that it shouldn't have. Because she's like, come on, mom, don't go to the school and curse them out. Please. Please, please, no. I'm going to the school. I'm going to go up there and I'm going to fuck everybody up because what they did was wrong. And I don't care if it's going to embarrass you. They are going to feel my wrath. But I love that that was her coming to peace with Jadis. I don't need to kill you. You're already going to die. But I will let you know that that delusion that you have, I'm going to take it. I'm going to shatter it. Okay? I'm taking it down because they're not the answer. And despite the fact that Michonne says that, Jadis fully expects her to respond in that manner, which leads to Rick saying, there's a reason why you kept us alive. And that just, to me, conveys that she went up against a force she knew she had probably a 5% chance of defeating. And she was going to try her best on this day that she was going to meet up with Gabriel to commit. But she knew she was going to most likely die trying. And that's when she's able to finally lift the veil that she had over herself previously when she was saying that it's about survival, it's about humanity, it's about the future, all those things. She was clouding herself, thinking that that was the answer, but it wasn't. So I really liked how Michonne made her peace with it, and she had enough sympathy, if not empathy, or am I getting it the other way around, empathy and not sympathy. And that she turns to Rick, like, you made a promise. You need to go through with your promise because ultimately I kept you prisoner and I threatened your family. And you said you were going to kill me for threatening your family. And you have earned that right to do so. And despite Rick taking no satisfaction from that kill, he does kill her.
You are dead, dead, dead. You are dead, dead, dead.
Thought you were hot. Guess what? You're not.
You are dead, dead, dead.
The three people, survivors that we came across, they were very take it or leave it to me. I just have a hard time believing 14, however many years it's been into the apocalypse, at least a decade, that there would be people this pathetically obvious out in the world, desperately obvious. Like, how do you survive this entire time? Have you really been robbing people and you're not dead? you barely can defend yourself. Like when Michonne and Rick approached them and they pulled their weapons, they weren't even a little bit scared because you weren't even emitting an aura that said you're menacing. It just came across as you should have taken this charity we offered you and you didn't. But it's another reference to being given a second chance and not taking that second chance, and it leading to all three of them dying, saying, we're not as strong as you. You didn't have to be as strong as us. All you had to do was stop trying to harm people. Stop being a part of something that you, I mean, come on. You just assume that this person's telling you the truth. There's bad people after me. Really? I'd like to do the rollback now. Rick said,
oh shit! You messing with the deer? The god deer? I'm about to fuck all you up!
I love we did get the old-fashioned Rick back with his coat. He cocked his head and said, how about you just listen?
Baby.
I did laugh out loud when he said, I'm peeing. They got what they had coming to them. And let's lastly talk about our honeymoon couple, tasteful nudes. They got the good life playing. Michonne had a lovely coat on. I don't know where she got that, but it was definitely one I was like, hold on. You need to send me that Pinterest. The way they used humor in this episode was really well done between them because it was fun. You know, they're trying to whack through something and they turn around and see a walker with a machete in them. They're like, oh, they got booze. They stop at a shop and he finds the baking soda toothpaste that she wanted from all that time ago. Him admitting that he was in love with his son's best friend and didn't know what to do about it. We don't need to discuss a lot of people bringing up Jesse. Like, we all knew that Rick was out of his mind. It was very clear and obvious. And when that, when that cloud started to dissipate, you could see it on his face. It would not have been very long between him and Jesse, and they didn't even do more than kiss. So I don't know why is anyone even bringing that into the situation as if he didn't say you're the love of my life last episode. But Rick has always been a romantic. He's turning into pudding. And I think people got so used to the Ricktatorship that they forgot that he's always rather been pudding. He's always disassociated when tragedy happens to his family. And his family has been Michonne for a very long time, encouraging him and supporting him in a lot of his leadership decision making, whether it's in a grayer area or some wisdom when it comes to Michonne. I really like how she's taken the lead in this series, because in The Walking Dead, she's always been the support and she's always been her own independent character. And I love that about the show, that they always definitely didn't make Michonne all about her relationship with Rick. But a lot of people would say that their relationship, what could say anyway, that the relationship wasn't rather center focused, to see how profoundly, even though he did say it in the show, episode, the one Say Yes, where we saw pretty much Michonne give up when she thought Rick was dead, and she says, I can't live without you. And him saying, yeah, you can. You're going to be the one who can, because you are the person that led me here. He's not prepared to lead without her, but she has been leading without him for a very long time while raising two babies. Okay. And still helping people, keeping her soul intact, even though she did have those years when, you know, she had to close people off because she was dealing with her own trauma. And hell, when you kill kids, that's fair. It's totally fair. And branded at that. So the maturity level for Michonne, I think, is so understated. The emotional maturity as well. But it's always been so. It's not a new concept that she has been a little bit further ahead on what needs to be done than Rick has been, despite Rick being the leader and the protagonist of the show. She's been a huge part of that, and there's no reason to, and I love that this show doesn't shy away from how she was in the shadows of that, where in this series, she's owning it to the point where she's like, this is what we're going to do. And Rick looks over like, yes, baby, anything that you say, I'm here, I'm yours. You lead, I follow.
My love is strong.
That's not to say that Rick is a simp or anything like that. Clearly, he stands his ground. He talks to his woman when he's trying to get his point across. He's involved, but don't expect the Ricktatorship to reemerge so fresh off of the almost decade of forced captivity and brainwashing. I think that there is going to be a point where the Ricktatorship is going to show the fuck back up. But right now, Rick is focused on the thing that matters the most to him, and that is his family. The thing he has been kept from him is his family. And now he's got a whole new set of skills that we haven't seen him emerge yet, because that family hasn't been under threat, right? He's been kept from his family, but it ain't been threatened yet. And I think once that line is crossed, that's when we're going to see the Rick Grimes that everyone is kind of, some fans anyway, are itching to see. And I get that from a purely fan perspective, but him showing the softer side and Michonne showing the softer side of themselves, it doesn't take away from their badassery. If anything, it highlights it even more so. So him having or wanting to get a present for RJ, Michonne being like, I never liked the nameplates because no one ever had Michonne. I feel that. Christina is a very common name. He wants to get Junior, even though no one calls him Junior. He's like, okay, I'm trying to suck on my things. She's like, you're bringing back yourself. That's more than enough. Him getting the booze out, the black label. Him getting the necklace, the M necklace. She's like, you found your moment. Mm-hmm. Is this my moment? I don't know. You tell me. And then them finding that room. He had the candles going. She's like, what you up to, Grimes? It's like, I'm just working with what I got. Working with what I got. But this is the heart of who he is. This is the truly definition of why he's such a good person. Because yes, there's this other side of him, but then there's this side of him that's absolute pudding and is madly in love with his wife and talked about all that time ago about marrying Michonne. And I love that Gabriel said they actually weren't married and Jade is just assuming that that was his wife. He's like, well, that doesn't really matter in this world. But Rick did say he wanted to marry her on the bridge that he died on. And while Gabriel at the time couldn't see that vision, one day he looked down and there was a ring and he was going to put it somewhere for Rick to find because he all of a sudden could see Rick's vision. But then he died. And he ended up giving that to Jadis. And I understand the reading of, well, she selfishly kept this on the whole time and didn't give it to them, so on and so forth. Yes, but my reading into it was she has been holding on. Because he said this is a symbol of hope and it's a symbol of faith and it's a symbol of love. And I think that those words very much sum up Rick and Michonne's relationship, but also what they bring to the world in their A status. And so her holding on to that ring is keeping that faith that, or not letting go of that idea that they could be the future, they could be the right path, despite her never choosing them truly. Or Alexandria, or, you know, because like you said, they were her people. They accepted her into the community. So in a lot of ways, she was one of them. Rick even said to Gabriel, you're one of us. So there was this connective tissue like, no, you fucked me over. I'm going to kill you. And I definitely want to kill you in the case of Michonne. But there's also this other side of how this really connects back to them and their influence over people as a beacon of light, even in their darkest tunnels. So I like how there was a symmetry there. And then we get the proposal, which I really loved. I gotta go in my notes to find the exact words here. It's a broken world, Michonne, and you're the only thing that puts it back together. Until my last breath, I'm yours. Following him on bended knee and saying that I'm yours, that was perfect. What do we have to look forward to the finale? I'm not sure, other than that someone's gonna get fucked up. Is there hope for Thorn? I feel that a lot of people are not taking this new opportunity like Negan did to, well, she hasn't really done anything bad yet. So I think that there really is hope for her to be turned around. But it could take time. So could they end up taking her with them since she's family? Because it would be nice if she's the second Shane of it all. And she does get some redemption or an opportunity to find the love, like Rick getting through to her and saying, look, I didn't let go and I found my wife and I have a child, and try to impart to her that, but she did feel like she really let go, but she hasn't, like I said, she still hasn't done anything yet. I don't know. She would probably need time. Did I bring up Michonne getting her katana back? Because I want Michonne to get her katana back. I miss it. I just do. That's her signature weapon. Even though she got the rebar and is doing just fine with it. I think that's all I have to say in regards to the episode and the finale. Hopefully we get a season 2. I don't think they're going to announce it because if they said we're getting a season two, then we're going to go into the finale thinking, okay, we're not going to get all our answers. I get why they wouldn't announce it. But at the same time, it's possible that we'll get like a 90-minute finale, and it does cover a lot of things. But this was supposed to be a 3-part movie, so I doubt it. They better give me another fucking season. We have feedback, so let's hop into the mailbag.
What up, Stina? It's Mimi. This is feedback for The Ones Who Live, episode 5. So we only got one episode left. I'm really happy to see how this concludes, but also sad. I don't want to be like getting my hopes up, but I'm hoping this last episode is at least like an hour and 30 minutes. I would love it if it's like a 2-hour movie, because there's a lot of things I need to see, and I don't know if 45 minutes is going to be enough time for me to see everything. Well, probably like 53 minutes is usually the time for when a show is an hour. But I need it to be more than 53 minutes. It's a lot of stuff I want to see. So let's just get into this episode. I'm just going to go through the scenes and how I felt. I got to be honest with you. I was hoping we would get back to Alexandria. And the last person that I've ever expected or wanted to see was whatever the preacher's name is. I'm drawing a blank. Let me just look it up. Gabriel. Father Gabriel. I don't even know if is he a Catholic priest? You know what? I don't even care. The fact that he's still wearing his preacher garb, priest garb, father garb, annoyed the shit out of me. And I can honestly say that I forgot that him and Jadis were a thing. I even forgot Jadis's real name was Anne. I never liked her at all. And Gabriel to me is the same as Eugene. They're both worthless characters that could have died, should have died a long time ago, that we had plenty of opportunities to die. Like, I feel like Gabriel's head should have been on that pike a long time ago when the skin people that killed all those people and put their head on a spike? I don't remember who did it, but they should have been dead then. Like, I can't stand him or Eugene. And then the fact that they had Rosita end up with him made me so mad. She was supposed to be with Sadiq. She got pregnant by Sadiq, but then they had her dating Gabriel. If I was the actress that played Rosita, I would be mad as fuck. I'm like, y'all not about to do that to me. Like, the audacity. But then we had to watch him repeatedly. Like, if y'all go back to Alexandria one more time and I got to look at these two irritating ass dickheads that I do not like. Gabriel is part of the reason I could not stand watching The Walking Dead anymore. Like, it was too many characters I didn't like in their storylines to outweigh the people that I wanted to follow. So literally stop watching. He was one of the reasons, him and Eugene, and Negan. Those were like the main reasons. Like, I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And then we go back to Alexandria and then we had to deal with him. And Jadis, like, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I'm glad we didn't get her long, but I feel like they were trying to make us have empathy and sympathy for Jadis. Like, bitch, you made a choice. Like, I'm not saying that I would make a different choice in situations like that. Sometimes you got to make, like, you have to decide between two shitty ass situations. But you made a choice to be with the CRM. So you need to stick with it. Going back to Alexandria seems so fucking pointless. Like, if you want to be talked out of this situation, why do you keep going back? Like, and the fact that she kept the ring that Gabriel gave her blows my mind. And why wouldn't Gabriel give that ring to Judith or RJ? Like, why are you giving it to Jay? Oh my God. He is so annoying. And then, like, the fact that he was meeting up with her all this time, I haven't caught up. I just recently found out that apparently Rosita's dead, which really makes me fucking sad because she has a baby. I don't know the circumstances. I don't know what happened. I just know that she's dead. Spoiler alert. I know you don't care because you don't plan on going back and watching. So I'm just go ahead and say that. She really was, or I should say he was really out there meeting up with Jadis, knowing that he's in a relationship with Rosita. I don't know the timeline. I know it was like 3 years ago was when it first started. So if it's been 9 years, that was 6 years ago, which is where Michonne was. That was when like season 10 was 6 years ago, if I'm remembering correctly. So him and Rosita were together. So you doing these secret rendezvous with your ex-girlfriend, that's really manipulative and wrong. Granted, I guess when they kissed, Rosita was already dead, whatever. That's fine. But the whole thing just really irked my soul. And seeing Jadis die was probably one of my favorite things. The only thing that would make, the only death that would, I think would be more satisfying right now for me is seeing Ivar the Boneless die. Because I don't know, Christina, what the last episode you saw, but I am 16 episodes into season 5. And the way that I thought Ivar was going to be my favorite character, I was wrong. I dislike him more than I dislike Jadis. I can honestly say that I hate him. He is the worst. I think I hate him more than I hated Aslaug, which is saying something. But anyway, back to The Walking Dead. So seeing Jadis like following Rick and them, I had a feeling it was going to be her. It makes sense, though. That should be the end of her story. Rick killed her because she was going to die anyway. I know that I'm petty. I would have personally waited for her to turn into a walker so that her body looks like a walker when I kill her. But that I'm petty like that. Rick and Michonne are better people than me. That's already been established eons ago. Because I'm quick to, like, if I was in that situation where I saved somebody's life and then you're going to try to rob me, I promise you're dead because you're not about to do that to somebody else. But like I said, I'm petty. Rashawn's better than me because that scene, as soon as they gave those people the ramen, I was like, okay, that was nice of them. I thought they were going to be like, oh, can we follow you? But then when he pulled the gun out, and it was so funny because the fat dude pulled the gun out and the guy that was skinny was just intrigued with these ramen noodles is all he was looking at. He was like 3 seconds behind pulling out his gun. And I was like, y'all do not want to do this. Like, if they just saved y'all, why do y'all think this is a good idea? I was like, y'all really, really fucked up. And then the way Michonne took the noodles back, I cackled. But look, this has nothing to do with the recap. I just have this thing that bothers me so much. Like, I feel like if we're this far into the zombie apocalypse, we're 9 years in, people like that group should not be alive. There's no way you made it this far. You built a camp. You have they look like they created like an indoor place too. I think they were probably outside looking for people to rob. Who knows? But I know that the place where Jadis and them ended up, it looked like they had made like a camping site. Like, that was where they stayed. They slept. I don't know. But y'all are in an area. You're in a group. You've been together this long. How do you guys not know how to fight? You should not be alive. If you made it through the zombie apocalypse this long, y'all should be just as good as Rick and Michonne. There is no way. Like, granted, I get looking for a better place, like hoping to find a place like Alexandria or even the CRM or any kind of community. I feel like that's always the goal. But y'all are three people in the woods in this area by yourselves. And you have guns, limited bullets. I'm assuming y'all got these guns somehow. And you clearly didn't have a lot of bullets. So how are you guys not capable of fighting? You got y'all ass whooped. Like, the way Rick and Michonne made quick work of them and took their guns away from them, it was embarrassing. Like, I'm not expecting y'all to fight like Michonne. I'm not expecting y'all to fight like Rick. Okay. Granted, like, they're warriors. But y'all should at least put up a fight. Y'all didn't even put up a fight. People like them should not be alive. Like, I feel like in situations like that, the weak would have been dead a long time ago. If you made it 9 years into the zombie apocalypse, there's no reason somebody should do quick work of you. No way. Like, look at fucking Nate. Nate was a little person who still managed to fight. He wasn't scared. I bet you he wasn't like that when it first happened. But you know, your humans evolve. You got to do what you got to do or you die. I seeing people like them in this far in the apocalypse kind of pissed me off. Like, you motherfuckers like Eugene, Gabriel, that group. Y'all motherfuckers should be dead already. There ain't no reason for y'all to still be alive. I'm gonna get off my soapbox. Anyway, and then we got the scene when Rick and Michonne got caught in the bed. It was like a parallel to their first time with, they call him Jesus? Yeah, his name was Jesus. That scene will forever be in my mind. It always makes me think about Denai saying that they were trying to have Michonne like cover herself up when Jesus walked in, and she was like, Michonne wouldn't do that. She would grab her sword, naked or not. Like, I ain't scared. Who cares if you see me naked? You're not about to catch me slipping. My sword is gonna be right there. Like, that was probably one of my favorite scenes of The Walking Dead altogether. The way that Carl saw Michonne coming out of Rick's room, like, everything about that episode was amazing. Like, I loved it. And then, Jadis, like, having, like, Rick and Michonne tie each other up. And I was like, I know she don't think she's just about to kill him. Like, you might shoot me, but it's not going to be easy. And the way that they, like, quickly got away from her. And was that an axe I saw Michonne throw? Like, everything about that was just so Michonne. I loved every second of it. And then I do appreciate the fact that Jadis, like, Jadis gave them a reason to go back to the CRM. And Michonne was like, look, we got to protect Alexandria. Even if it risks our lives, let's go back. I love that. It gave us a reason to go back. And then it's going to be a reason for a face-off between Pearl and Michonne. And I think because Rick and Jadis got the face-to-face face-off, I think Pearl and Michonne are going to have a face-off. And I think it's going to be a good fight. Michonne's clearly going to win, but I think it's going to be a good fight. Because Pearl has something to prove. And we know she's, like, we can't slack on her. She is the boss bitch, and I'm not gonna take that away from her. She ain't no Michonne, but how many people are? It's gonna be a good face-to-face. But I personally am looking forward to the reunion to Alexandria. I don't know who is left in Alexandria. I just found out that Rosita's dead, and after them putting her with Gabriel, they really fucked up to make her die like that. I know the actress was pregnant, so maybe that's why they had her have a baby in the show. But nonetheless, I know that Sadiq died, like, I want to say season 9, season 10. I think it was the same season that Michonne left. So I know Rosita's baby, I don't know what the baby's name is, but I know her baby daddy dead. And I know Rosita's dead, so is Gabriel raising her baby? Like, I don't know. This makes me sad because he's such trash. I don't know who's left in Alexandria. I have no idea. But I know I'm looking forward to the RJ and Judith reunion with Rick. Because Judith was a baby. She was like a toddler. Wasn't she little when she last saw Rick? Like, would she even recognize him? I feel like she would know he's the brave man. She probably has an image in her mind, but they don't have pictures. They didn't have that back then. Oh, no, they do. Carl found that picture of Lori and Rick and him at that restaurant that Michonne went in and got. So she does have a picture of Rick. Maybe she will recognize him. I don't know. But that scene is going to fucking break me. I know it. Knowing it's the last episode of that series, knowing that it's a reunion after 9 years, I just can't even. And someone said when Rick sees RJ and says, "Hello, Junior," they're going to pass out. And I was like, oh, my God, if he does say that, because Michonne was like, nobody's ever called him Junior. And I feel like that was an invitation so that Rick has a nickname for his son that nobody else calls him. And I feel like that's why they put that in there. And when someone said that, it all fell into place. And I think I might die. So I am so happy to see this episode. And it's going to be on Easter. It's going to be bittersweet. But I'm looking forward to it. And I hope they have like one of those. Like, I know Talking Dead isn't a thing anymore because that host got into trouble with some sexual harassment type shit. Something like that. So I don't think he does his show anymore, but I hope they have something like that because I would love to see everybody come together and talk about it. Even people from The Walking Dead. I hope they do something like that. But anyway, I'm going to end it here. Until next time, love, peace, hair grease, and Black Girl Magic. Queen of the Couch, Mimi out.
That was Queen Mimi with her thoughts on the episode. I knew we were going to get some commentary regarding Gabriel's presence in this episode. And it's expected. A lot of people were really happy to see Jadis finally be put down. I think that a lot of your criticisms are very valid. Even with Gabriel's character, I mean, I guess he's changed, but I don't know. No, I was fine. Like I said, I was fine when he finally started killing people and stopped being against Rick. I could have killed off many other characters besides Gabriel. Eugene, yes, I think he's universally nobody wanted you. But yeah, I mean, Sadiq could have went. That one guy that everybody seemed to like that was with Ezekiel, never cared for. Carol should have been gone a long time ago. Everybody of that new group. I mean, yeah, I didn't dislike or like Gabriel any more than I liked a lot of anybody else that was introduced after season 6, with the exception of Connie. It's the only character I gave any shits about as far as progressing storylines. But it's funny that I addressed a lot of the critiques that you had in my episode about the Rosita thing. So I'll just leave those statements as they stand. I think you can sympathize without empathizing. Jeez, I keep going backwards. Empathizing without sympathizing. Because sympathizing is getting down in the muck with you and being like, oh, you're completely right in what you're feeling, versus empathizing, being like, objectively, I can see where you went wrong, but you're right. You still made those decisions and you made the wrong decisions. And the only thing you can do at the end of that is try to die making some type of atonement. And that was what she did by giving up the dossier. But there's no debating that she had to die just for the years that she stole from this family for her own selfish reasons. And not only selfish, but tenuous ones. It's the same thing that Michonne told Rick. You weren't going to take them down all by yourself. You need way more help to do that. Same thing with Jadis. You were not going, like, you're trying to save Alexandra all by yourself. The way you guys are doing things, you're allowing this threat of people with technology and people who's seemingly a far cry from you. You're making them the ultimate, nobody can beat them. And it didn't even take Michelle more than a couple of fucking minutes in that community to realize what I've been saying this whole time, that everybody's not going to be cool with that, with what they've been doing. And we don't even know what they're planning. I like the only part I did, like, I agree with everything you said. It's kind of like we have the same brain sometimes about the survivors. I think the point was to show, just with the theme, that following the wrong person can ultimately lead to your demise. You know, they just kept following this guy, the fat guy, and the other two weren't completely on board with it, but because they had their mantra, you know what we say, they're fall following in the lead. So yeah, if you're a follower and you follow the wrong person, you could end up losing your life, or bad consequences will happen due to that. But I mostly really didn't care for that part. There was a couple of scenes where Jadis was, yeah, like there's a couple of Jadis scenes where I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Are you trying to kill him or not? Because why would you kick an axe towards her or the machete? Why would you get Michonne to drop shoot all of her bullets out, saying, if I die, and if, you know, you have to shoot these walkers behind me, that she would wait a whole half a second before deciding to shoot at Michonne? Good callback to Jesus. That's exactly how they were woken up. Notice that Rick was still, even in a dangerous situation, which he clearly didn't feel that much danger in, that he was checking out Michonne's ass in them boxer shorts. You know what to do with that big fat butt. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Andy says he does not watch the show because he doesn't watch his performances, but somebody had to tell him that he's been caught out her ass, because he be just leaning into that shit now. It was looking good in the box store. I was like, girl, you was giving all of the fuck me vibes. It could be the fight with Thorn. I personally don't want to see that. Mainly because girl and girl fights, that it still falls into that trope of a comparison between two strong female black characters that I don't want to see them tropishly move into. I think that the same reason why Jadis, or Rick, was the one to take out Jadis, these are kind of his horcruxes. For lack of a term right now, from Harry Potter, like things that he's gotta to get. That's probably the wrong analogy too. The hurdles that he has to before he can, you know, fully extricate himself, you know, and confront his, cause she didn't do anything to him. Right? But he's going to want to save her. And I feel like it'd be too easy to have Michonne. Like, even when they were having a confronting moment where she was threatening Michonne, he was the one that was like, oh no, bitch. In both scenarios. So I think that Rick is going to be handling that situation. And Michonne, because she's the GOAT, is going to be handling the GOAT of the CRM. And that is General Beale, who we got very little of, I will say, of Terry Quinn's character, who's an amazing character, and we don't even get what his motivations are, but she has a sword, he has a sword, they gotta have a sword fight, right? It just feels as if those are the two opposing sides, more so than Michonne versus Thorn. It's more like Michonne was looking at Thorn like, I don't understand why you're trying so hard, girl. You want to be me so bad. And I do mean, like, just have the confidence that I have. I said she's a A that got caught up in being a B, but that doesn't mean she can't be changed back into an A. So I hope they surprise us with her storyline, but maybe she just dies and that's it. Gabriel, I know, is raising Rosita's baby because she asked him to. Judith has a sword. Nah, she's like 12. I like when she says they're us. Like, our kids are not bitches. And it's only been a year, like maybe a year and a month or so since she's seen her daughter. So the most she's going to be is 13. And RJ should be, as she said, almost 8. And nice call out to Rick being the one to call his son Junior. I hope that is indeed the case. That would be lovely. Have something that's only his because no one else calls him Junior. Yeah, that would make me all misty-eyed. But that is where we're going to wrap up the podcast. If you, girl, we're going to talk all about your Ira feelings. I didn't get to season 5, okay? But we'll talk about that when you're done. If you want to see facts and feedback on The Ones Who Live, blackercouch@gmail.com. You can leave a comment below. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. Looking forward to this finale, but very sad the show is going to be ending. But I'm more excited just for the finale. I just want to know how this shit's going down. Until next time, peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.